It's not that often that you see a player live up to the hype, and although Iowa did a very good job for the most part of bottling up as best they can, he did kind of single-handedly win that game for him there in the fourth quarter.
He did. I mean, Melvin Gordon was being Melvin Gordon, and the whole world is just his PlayStation game. Set on varsity level.
You know, it's really interesting, Jim. Badger fans are not usually very what's the word I'm looking for? They can be pretty brash and braggy and stuff. But it was interesting reading on their message boards this week that, to a man, almost every single one I read said if they knew if Iowa got the ball back in that fourth quarter, they were going to lose the game.
I felt it.
That they noted that. I think everybody felt that. And, you know, it's one of those, I've said it before, sometimes you just have to tip your hat to the other team. I can't find a lot of fault with Iowa's fight in this game. I might have some faults with some of the game plan thoughts, but in terms of fighting their asses off and playing as hard as they can and leaving it out on the field, what can you complain?
Well, first off, we should say welcome to 12 Saturdays. I'm James Bladle.
And I'm Tori Breck.
And we are recovering from the Iowa-Wisconsin game. Came up just a little short against Wisconsin and the Fighting Gordons. You know, I don't know, Tori, I made the mistake of posting an opinion about the quarterback play on one of the message boards. I think it was Hawkeye Report. And of course, you know, without meaning to, was instantly dragged into this, you know, you're either with Jake or you're against Jake kind of, extremism. And so I guess to my answer to your question is, you know, I felt like all phases of the offense were a little too timid and conservative. I think some of that was play calling, but I also think some of that was just some, you know, the players were just a little tight, and it just wasn't happening. You know, to get out of that, when you lose a game by 2 points and you've got 3 points in the first half, I think that there is something to be said about just the uneven production of the offense. Now, I say all of that knowing that absolutely the last, say 20 minutes of game time, I would say the fourth quarter and maybe the last two possessions of the third quarter, I mean, it was definitely clicking. And even the last two possessions, it seemed like, you know, our passing game in particular was just moving the ball at will, and Wisconsin was just beat. So, yeah, they left it out there, and they came up a little short. And sometimes you do everything right, and it's just not enough.
Yeah, you know, it's so frustrating, too, and I know, you know, I've been kind of stealing your line on this that you've been saying for, geez, 2 seasons or so now, but boy, it sure does feel like Iowa always has to play the role of the very good, spirited, tough opponent that you just somehow heroically managed to barely overcome to save your dream season.
When
is it our turn to do that again? When do we get to do that again? Because, shit, it's been a long time. And, man, and especially to see Wisconsin over – and the thing that epitomized that the most to me, you know, you have two relatively even teams battling it out here, and our Weissman on the first drive, very routine play where it looks like he's just going down to the ground, and apparently the ball squirted out just before a knee or an elbow hit, barely, and, of course, it goes directly to Wisconsin. Meantime, a little later, Gordon gets rocked. The ball flies like 6 feet into the air, just hangs there. For anybody to grab, And of course, falls right back to the Badgers. And, yeah, you know, that's the kind of stuff that as a fan just makes you sometimes wonder if you're cursed. I don't know.
Well, you know, and it's a good point because
one turnover game and you lose by two. I mean, that really was the game because, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it is just maddening. Like you said, it's almost like our descent into karma hell began with Wisconsin, right? We began with that fake punt back in 2010, mm-hmm. and we just haven't been able to get a bounce or a break ever since. You know, I'm even thinking of the who was Ball State when it was third and long, and you know, the ball just flies right out of the receiver's hand. It's right at the sticks and goes another 20 yards and bounces into the hands of the cheap guy. And it's been happening a lot. And I think, yeah.
Well, what about a loss? I mean, the Iowa State game this year. You know, they missed the freaking field goal, but of course we called a timeout to, quote, ice the kicker, and they get another chance. It doesn't seem like any of the key breaks that separate a 7-8 win team from a 10-11 win team, which isn't that big of a difference.
You know,
that's the difference.
I got to blame somebody, and I have a villain in mind, by the way. It's Brandon Wafer's fault.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, he was only with the team for one season, right? It was the 2009 season, and you know, he went into the Orange Bowl. He scored the last touchdown to ice the game in the Orange Bowl. It was basically his storybook season, right? He came out of nowhere, made that one-handed grab to really fire things up in the Iowa State game, put himself on the map, had an amazing freshman year.
All the Superman dives.
The Superman dives and all that stuff. He was the second coming of Timmy Dwight as a freshman, and then he doesn't play the next season. And you know, so to me, it's like all of the goodwill, all the good breaks, all the, you know, the fortune favors the bold, all that stuff was just kind of spent, all of it to the benefit of one guy.
Well, I know you're being somewhat facetious about that, and I agree with it, but on the other hand, has Iowa had a dynamic running back since then? Have they had one that they've been able to hold on to?
Well, as a freshman, maybe Coker's run, but that's about it.
And I don't want to take anything away from Mark Weissman. He's done more than anyone ever expected. I'm going to mark him down as one of my favorite players of all time. He really is. And so I don't mean to sound like I'm bashing on him because I think he's a really solid player. But I think what you see with the difference between the Wisconsin program and the Iowa program right now is if you put Melvin Gordon on Iowa and put Mark Weissman on Wisconsin, we're the team competing for a Big Ten championship. We're the team, you know, even thinking about maybe sneaking into the back door of the college playoffs this year, I think, because our quarterback play and receiver play is better than Wisconsin's overall. And, you know, Gordon was a one-time Iowa commit. That is how close, you know, being a contender and being just outside of that is in this day and age.
Yeah, but it's, you know, but it's still, it's an inch outside or a mile outside. I mean, once you're out, you're out. And I think the thing that bothers me is that, or maybe it's just the thing that concerns me is that Wisconsin just seems to have this assembly line for that kind of running back. I mean, you know, the only reason we're talking about Gordon is because, you know, James White graduated last year and Monte Ball the year before, right? I mean, they just keep churning them out. And one of my thoughts, and I don't know the answer to this, but maybe at this level, when you're not, when you're not Alabama or Oregon or Florida State, one of my questions is it possible to have both that standout quarterback and that standout running back on the same team?
I think so. And you got to keep in mind.
No, at our level, though.
Iowa has been recruiting pretty well, too. You know, I mean, LaShawn Daniels, who's injured for the rest of this year. Remember, he was a 4-star recruit. It picked us over a lot of other teams. You know, this Caron Higdon from Sarasota or Fort Myers that's coming in. You know, look at his laundry list. So, you know, it's again, it's keeping them healthy, keeping them on the roster. And that's, I think, one of the big missing elements of the Iowa offense. You know, especially with the way Coach Ferentz likes to run programs, we got to have that big time running threat, and hopefully it's coming.
Well, and the other difference, I think, between this year and last year, and this is shifting gears a little bit, I was reading a statistic that this year's defense, for as well as they are doing, and they've had some games where they had a breakdown, but they had Gordon fairly well bottled up, aside from one long play. This year's defense, though, is not creating turnovers. The last turnover, I believe, was the pick six versus what was it? The picks? There was some turnovers.
Northwestern.
Yeah, but I mean that was the last. I'm sorry, that was the last interception. I think there was a fumble against Illinois. It's just they're not really on the takeaway. I mean they've only turned the ball over. I think it was 15, 16 times on the year, which is not bad. But we're still at like a negative turnover ratio because we're just not getting the turnovers. And you know, when people say, well, how did Northwestern beat Wisconsin? And the answer is Stavi threw three picks.
Yep.
Now, is there any doubt in your mind that if Stavi throws three, even two picks, even one pick, that we win that game on Saturday?
Oh, no. I think if you just reverse the, I mean, it was a one turnover margin. Iowa was minus one. And to me, that pretty much was the game, really. You know, if we could have got the ball back from them once, it was stopping their possessions is what, right. At the end, is what we needed. So, you know, but it's interesting. I'm going to go back a little bit to what you said about the difference between being an inch outside or a mile outside. I agree with you in terms of the overall picture, but I think what you have to keep in mind, though, is when you start thinking about hope and projecting forward, you know, I think that after the Minnesota game, I was really worried that maybe Iowa was kind of sinking down into that lower bottom of the Big Ten. And I don't feel that way now. I mean, I think we've shown that they are right there. You know, we're ready to fix some things, you know, maybe get a couple breaks from a personnel standpoint. You know, we're not a bottom feeder. We basically wiped out the bottom feeders we played, Indiana, Purdue, Northwestern, Illinois. You know, Minnesota is a contender. They killed us. Wisconsin, we went toe-to-toe with. You know, we're at the bottom third of the upper echelon, which is a lot better than having to dig your way all the way out for the bottom. That's why I actually, and I wrote this in my column this week, I think this Friday's game is actually hugely important, even though for a lot of fans, they may be ready to kind of turn the page on this season, but I'm not. I think you have to, at the very least, plateau at that 8-win level that you had last year. You can't let that slide start going back the other way.
Yeah, I agree. This game and the bowl game are critical to determining the direction and the vector of the program. Is it recovered from 2012, or is it still backsliding? And I think about how different we would feel going into this game, and going, you know, into, you know, how different we'd feel about this season generally if we had won that stupid Iowa State game. Because I agree with you, there's no disrespect in losing to Maryland. I don't like the way we lost to Minnesota, but you know, like we said at the time, it only counts as one loss whether they beat you by one or you know, pound you by double digits. In Minnesota, you know, clearly this is their year. We'll see next week how legit they really are, but you know, I don't. So I don't have any issues with that, and certainly we gave everything out there with Wisconsin. My issue is just, you know, when you sum it all up, that it's always that one outlier, and that's Iowa State.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, and that's another example I think of, you know, just that those little humps that it seems that are making it very frustrating, and that, you know, I know our friend Tom Kakert refers to as Ferentz fatigue. You know, it just, when you kind of keep seeing those things crop up like that, that they're just preventing you from, you know, garnering respect and, you know, being a true, upper echelon type of team. Yeah. It gets old.
It's the albatross around Coach Ferentz's neck, and it's what's keeping you from enjoying your bells too hearted, because we had that break point at 8 wins. And it's keeping us from maybe playing for, you know, knowing going into our last game before the Nebraska game, before the bowl game, knowing that this was a better season than last.
You know, we keep talking about the bells, but I forgot what I bet you.
Bells.
Oh, so you were going to get a bell.
Yeah. If somebody's getting some beer.
7 was the push.
No. 7's mine. 8's yours. 7.5 was the break point when we made the bet.
Yeah, I thought you were really negative, and I thought we said Six or lower, you get it. Seven's a push, and eight are. But we'll ask? We'll ask Dustin because he was there, right?
He was there, and I think it was recorded on the podcast.
We'll either ask Dustin or we'll go back to the podcast. That's why we can't trust each other. You always have to have a witness.
Recording, so. Well,
let's flush that Wisconsin game. At least we don't have to get the plunger out this week.
No, we'll give it a good, honest flush, and then we'll talk a little bit about Nebraska and head to our guest. I'm excited for our guest. So
yes, good one this week.
All right, so coming up, I mean, that was our pivot to Nebraska. You know, looks like they're a team that's kind of back on their heels. They've lost two in a row, one, pretty decided fashion, and then they lost a squeaker at home. To Minnesota. Are you surprised by the outcome, Minnesota versus Nebraska?
A little bit, I guess. I mean, you know, I've said since the beginning of the year, though, that I am a big believer in the Bo Pelini four-loss paradigm, algorithm, whichever. I'm not a math guy. But it's predestined. He's going to lose four games, and, you know, the path was he's going to have to lose his last three because they got off to a good start.
They got off to a good start. Axiom, I think, is the word you were looking for.
That's it.
He is on target for his fourth loss, which is weird because two weeks ago they were talking about scenarios where Nebraska backs its way into the playoffs.
Yeah, I never believed that.
Well, I don't think anybody outside of Nebraska believed that. but there was a path for them to get in, and certainly with some of the weirdness we saw earlier in the season, anything was possible, including Nebraska losing two in a row and possibly setting up for three in a row. I think that they've got to be just maybe a little more demoralized right now than Iowa.
Well, definitely their fan bases. I mean, if you take a look at some of their boards, I mean, they're ready to kick Pelini out the door like yesterday. So, and I think the team's a little beat up too. I know. I think their big receiver Kenny Bell has his bell rung, and he probably isn't going to be playing. And I think David Gregory, their great defensive lineman, left the game, and I'm not sure if he came back or not either. So. It might be the right time for Iowa to be playing them. If you remember last year, they were beat up when Iowa played them.
I do remember that. And we got them, on the road just as we were peaking and they were kind of, you know, back reeling on their heels. And, you know, I don't get that. I mean, I can kind of see why Nebraska feels like they're entitled to more than what they're getting, but, you know, I'd be concerned just generally that if you fire a coach for, you know, 6 years of 9-win seasons? I mean, what kind of a message are you sending to the next candidate or the coaching world in general?
Well, you know, I think that's a special kind of hell that a Nebraska fan is in because, you know, it's hard to fire somebody like that. But like we mentioned, though, their losses, it's like one or two every year are absolute blowouts. Though. And like, you know, I mean, granted, now we kind of know what that feels like after what happened in Minnesota this year. But imagine if that was every year of a coach's regime, which we haven't experienced. And so, you know, I think that would be just god awful. I can't even imagine.
Well, and that's a good point. I mean, up until Nebraska joined the Big Ten, you don't usually see anybody on the wrong side of a score where the winning team scores somewhere upwards of 60 points.
One of the craziest stats I saw was that there's been over 1,300 games played in Nebraska football history, and the most rushing yards they've given up are to the 2014 Badgers and the 2012 Badgers. In over 1,300 football games. I mean, let that sink in, and then think about how would you feel to have that guy coaching your team.
It's just maddening for him. But I also think that they have unrealistic expectations. Going back to, you know, when they were kind of just given the Big 12 North without much of ceremony, and even going back prior to that when they were kind of the monsters of the Big 8. This is a different game now, and not just because they're in a different conference, but also I think just the parity and the way that the Big Ten operates and the different offenses and defenses that they're facing, it's not quite the same. And I don't think they have. I remember when they were being added to the Big Ten and some of the Nebraska message boards, some of their fans were clearly disappointed that they were taking a step down in terms of competitive quality.
Yeah, it's going to be boring winning 12 games and going to the Big Ten championship every year, right?
Yeah, they were like, do I need to get an apartment in Indianapolis or what?
Well, it's always a little bit of schadenfreude to be able to share their disappointment, you know, in the midst of a little bit of ours. But, you know, I think another reason this game is important from a fan standpoint, I know there's going to be a percentage that are going to call this season a disappointment period, but you know, I don't know. I think, if you come out and make a nice statement and win this game well, I'm not going to call it a great season, but I would put it right into the getting into the acceptable, category for me as a fan.
So not for me. I feel like this season has been a disappointment. Well, first of all, if we don't win Saturday, then I think it's definitely been a step back. And I think that's certainly the case, regardless of the outcome of the bowl game, which I treat sort of as a separate little mini season.
Yeah, no, there's no way to argue that, you know, going 7 wins, especially with this schedule, is a disappointment. With you 100% there.
But the three things that I kind of, there were three reasons why, or the three factors, I believe that the expectation for me, the bottom, was 8 wins, and really the likelihood seemed to be about 9. There were three reasons. One was that, you know, you had, like you said, the schedule. I mean, all the tough games were at home. Obviously, we didn't see Minnesota coming up out of the weeds. That kind of snuck up, and Maryland was better than advertised. Okay, but you also had you and I, you know, which, come on. I mean, there's really absolutely no situation. 2009 aside, there's really no scenario under which you should legitimately lose to a FCS school coming in from in-state. And Iowa State, I mean, the wheels had come off the train, you know, well into the August camp. It was pretty clear that that was a program that was, I don't know if you can say rebuilding in Iowa State. It was continuing to start from scratch, and yet we lost one of those. And so, you know, you're already smacking your head against the table when your Big Ten season starts. The second factor for me was that, you know, we had so much returning talent, both on the offensive and defensive lines, which, you know, is the hallmark of any successful Ferentz program. We had experience coming back at the skill positions. The question marks for, you know, were definitely at linebacker and I guess the kickers as well. So that was, you know, but I mean, so the personnel seemed to be pointing in the right direction. And the final one is that, you know, we really haven't had any, you know, and knock on wood here, but we really haven't had to deal with injuries that we have on the scale of previous years. And particularly I'm thinking like 2012 and then going back before that with all the running backs dropping like flies. I mean, I know we've got a couple of folks out now, but really it has not, the injury bug has not bitten as hard this last 2 years as it has years prior. So I felt like all three of those things were pointing to, this is one of those, the stars are aligning, and I wasn't expecting playoff or BCS level bowl, but I thought, you know, maybe that, you know, wasn't out of the realm to think that we would be, even undefeated perhaps coming into, November because of the way the schedule lined up.
Yeah, and I don't think that any of your expectations were unreasonable at all. I am 100% with you. And, you know, again, I think you've mentioned this many times, and I'm with you on it. The Iowa State game is really kind of that pendulum swing, and it really is unacceptable. That particular outcome was, you know.
If Iowa's season were the Back to the Future series, the Iowa State game is where Biff got the almanac. Right.
Yeah. Right.
That's where the timeline diverged from what should have happened.
Right. And I guess I might actually talk myself into being more disappointed than I am. But when I look at it, I guess one of the things that's a disappointment this year is that there hasn't really been that signature win or that upset win, like, or even one that maybe you didn't expect to win, but you did. I'd say last year when Iowa was kind of chugging along and having some ups and downs, and all of a sudden reeled off, you know, bam, beat Michigan, who it turned out maybe wasn't as good as we thought, but bam, beat Nebraska as well. You know, you had some wins that you could hang your hat on. Now with Nebraska being in sort of disarray, even winning that one isn't going to feel like that huge of an accomplishment. So when you look back at this season and you look at the eight wins, you don't have any that give you kind of that warm, fuzzy feeling inside, I don't think.
Well, you know, but we have to, because I think the Nebraska win, you know, all those check boxes that we didn't check last week are still out there. You know, the win against not the ranked school, I guess that they took care of that last week, but the win against a school with a winning record and the trophy. I mean, you know, the Heroes Trophy, as ugly as that thing is the last thing in the glass case, you know?
Yeah, and that you got to keep at least one in there, right?
Right. Well, let's hear what our guest has to think. I think this is a pretty good get, as they say in the business that we're not a part of, show business, podcast business? Is it still a business?
Podcasty-wood? I don't know.
The podcast charity that we...
right. Well, and I want to give a special shout-out to my colleague, Daryl Cross, who helped us secure our guest. Daryl, a former standout athlete at Northern Michigan University, a very large human like our guest, Davenport's own offensive lineman and Little League superstar, Julian Vanderveld.
All right, so we have a great guest this week. It's a former Hawkeye and former Quad City football player, standout as well. It's Julian Vanderveld from are you back with the Eagles now, Julian?
I am. I'm back with the Eagles.
Fantastic. Congrats. Well, welcome to our podcast and our dozens and dozens of listeners.
We've actually topped the hundreds mark. Jim is a little too self-effacing.
All right.
But 100 goes into, you know, dozens go into hundreds.
Eventually.
That's right. You get enough dozens, sooner or later you get there.
That's true. So Davenport is your home and kind of where you got started. And, you know, a few years back, I kind of talked a little to some parents and stuff from the Quad Cities area. What, you know, this is not too bad of a football hotbed here. Kind of walk us through, you know, what it was like. You know, I think you actually kind of got a little bit of fame early, though, didn't you, with your Little League team?
I did, actually. There's probably more people back home in the Quad Cities who know me as that huge kid from the Little League World Series than from my football. Back at the 2000 World Series, the year 2000, at the time I was actually the largest child to ever play in the Little League World Series. I think the tallest in terms of weight. So I got a little bit of notoriety and fame there, and for some colorful interviews and stuff. And people have you know, remembered me for that, I think, more fondly than anything.
But agile, big but agile, isn't that?
Big but agile. You know, I've always been kind of an athlete and deceptively quick for my size. But you know, at the time I thought I was going to play baseball forever. And then I got to high school and found out that I liked hitting people on the football field more than I liked hitting baseballs. And you know, I took off from there.
That's kind of crazy because you know people hit back.
I know, right? Like I don't know if there's just. And there's just something of like, maybe I just feel bad for the one-sided abuse of a baseball. You know, I've got an implement, it's flying at me, not of its own free will. I feel bad, you know, knocking them out of the park. Like they're so defenseless.
That makes sense. So what would you say was your most memorable sporting moment, you know, in your relative young life so far? You know, you've like you mentioned, you were on that great baseball team from Davenport Little League, and then of course some Hawkeye stuff, and now you're in the NFL. What's been the one shining moment for you?
Well, I think in terms of playing, the biggest thing for me was being able to start for the Hawkeyes. You know, the NFL is great and I'm very appreciative and blessed to have had this opportunity to play in the NFL, but growing up in the Quad Cities in Davenport, you know, I was an Iowa kid, the Hawkeyes were kind of you know, I bled black and gold for as long as I could remember. So to have that opportunity to go there and play for the Hawkeyes, and I thought coming out that I was going to be one of those guys who just kind of rode the bench, who bided my time, you know, maybe senior year by that time I was able to start, you know, maybe had a shot like in an NFL camp, just, you know, on an offhand, like somebody, you know, signing me as a free agent or something. But to have the opportunity to go to Iowa, to excel there, to have a great time both on and off the field, and just, you know, help with some of the better years that the Hawkeyes have had recently. You know, the Orange Bowl win over Georgia Tech and some of those other ones. Was, you know, those are the memories that I think are most cherished in my mind.
Yeah, not just start for the Hawkeyes, but also, I mean, just really, like you said, excelled for them for so long. I noticed you're on the Eagles. There's a couple other former Hawks on their roster as well. Is it Fletcher and Tobin?
Yeah, Matt Tobin and Bradley Fletcher.
Yeah. So what's that like when you run into former Hawkeyes or even former teammates? Either, you know, on your professional roster, or what's it like when you play against them?
It's always a great experience. You know, the family and the brotherhood, the camaraderie is always there. You know, some of my best friends from my days at Iowa are playing on different teams. We played against Carl Klug and the Titans this past weekend. Myself and Mike Daniels were basically like brothers when we were at Iowa. Now he's, you know, excelling, moving, I think, towards a perennial Pro Bowl-type career with the Packers. I knew Micah Hyde very well, Adam Gettis, who's now with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And yeah, just to have some guys like Bradley Fletcher, who I looked up to as a young guy, you know, here in Philadelphia with me, and Matt Tobin, who I kind of took as under my wing when he got to Iowa. He was undersized, but had good technique, and I always saw a lot of potential in him, and kind of helped him along in his early career. To see the kind of success that he's having now here in Philadelphia, be able to track his career, it's a fantastic experience. You know, I don't start or get a lot of playing time, but to, you know, to be a part of this community of Hawks doing great things it's a real blessed feeling. You know, it's not something that I probably would have ever imagined when I was younger.
Well, I think it's so important too for you know, the continuation of the program too, to have you guys out there as examples and, you know, something for others to look up to. When you guys as a group kind of look at the last few years and this year's team, you know, of course, hopefully you guys don't listen to the fans freaking out about stuff too much. But, you know, it seems like there's a kind of a split camp among a lot of fans about, you know, this, whether they believe that Coach Ferentz can, you know, reboot another big run, you know, another BCS level, compete for Big Ten championships, kind of like when you were there. When looking from the outside now, you know, what do things look like to you when you look at the program now?
You know, the one thing that has never crossed my mind is how good of a coach Ferentz is. You know, he is a rock. He is a consistent, you know, person in terms of his attitude and what he demands of his players. I think that, you know, football is kind of a cyclical thing. You know, both in college and in the NFL, you get, you know, teams get good and then kind of fall off. And it's very difficult for any team to really stay at the top for a very long time. And, you know, it seems like every time a team takes a dip, everyone starts screaming for the coach's head. But the biggest things about a program, one of the best things about Iowa is the resiliency of that staff, the commitment that they have to the players, and the consistency with which they're able to bring in a certain style of player, a certain type of talent. I think one of my favorite quotes was from Hayden Fry about the University of Iowa. He said, when you recruit a kid to play at Iowa, you don't recruit them to play Big Ten football. You recruit them to play Iowa football. You make sure that they want to play Iowa football. And there's a difference. And I think that Coach Ferentz knows that, and he's done a very good job of bringing in guys that are Iowa football players, not just Big Ten football players. So I do think that, in very much so that same cyclical nature, you'll see a resurgence of the Iowa program. Now, I don't. I know when I was there was the rumor that Coach Ferentz was only going to stay until his last son was out of the program. He wanted to see all of his kids, come up through a single school. He didn't want to have to drag his family halfway across the country. So that the end is fast approaching in terms of that landmark. I don't know if he'll stick around for another wave of, Big Ten championship contention teams or what his plans are. But I do think that there's still some old juice, some old Kirk Ferentz magic left in that program.
Well, that's great to hear. Talking with some folks that know you here in the Quad Cities, we know that your life is goes way beyond football, and you have a lot of interests out there. And I understand that you're kind of a comic books freak, right?
I love comics. I love the Marvel Cinematic Universe, what they're doing, the some of the more fringe comic books that they've come out with, and just in general, I loved Scott Pilgrim long before it was a movie,
Oh my
and was
gosh.
just elated to see that come out in movie form. I thought they did a pretty good job with that. So yeah, I mean, definitely out there a little ways.
That's so weird. I just watched that this weekend. That is so weird that you mentioned Scott Pilgrim.
So I just read one. I just my guy I work with has just recently been starting to get back into it, which is weird because did you know Rock Island actually has three comic book stores for a city that size? I think that's weird. But anyway, I just read. Have you read the Quentin Tarantino one yet? Zorro meets Django.
I have not, but that sounds fantastic.
You got to check it out. Oh, they've only made the one, the very first issue so far, but it's pretty interesting. So that's kind of good. So, what are, you mentioned some, do you like kind of more of the superhero stuff or more of the science fiction stuff, or what's kind of gets you going on that?
Well, I had a bizarre obsession, fascination, whatever you want to call it. With Japanese manga, the Japanese comic books when I was in college. I think at one point in time, I spent like over $1,000 in a matter of, I think 2 months on Japanese comics.
Now, you weren't getting
And
any
it,
unfair benefits from boosters or any,
no,
special
it was,
Japanese.
that was, it was supposed to be rent and food money. And so there was about a week or two where outside of meals that were mandatorily provided by the football program, I wasn't eating and I wasn't sure if I was gonna, pay rent. It was kind of a worrying situation. It taught me a little bit about budgeting and real life consequences. But that was, that I have a rather massive collection of anime and manga back at my house, Davenport. As far as American comics go, I'm much more heavily invested in Marvel than I am in DC. I don't know why. I feel more connected with that universe than I do with the DC universe.
Now I hear also that you're kind of a Quad Cities food connoisseur as well. Give me your top three places you have to eat when you come back to town.
I don't know if I'm a food. I'm desperately want to become like a food judge or a food critic or something. If any time I'm in town and there's a food competition of any sort, I want to be the first person to know about it. I would love to get into that scene because I'm a bit of a foodie. My favorite places in town, the places that I have to hit when I come back. As far as like food, normal food, I have to hit Hai Ho Mongolian Grill. The first one over by the Chuck E. Cheese is not the Hoo Ha up on 53rd. I don't know why. I prefer that one. Maybe it's because they let you take your food home so I can get, 3 days worth of food in a single bowl and take it home with me and it's still good 3 days later. But that Harris pizza, that Quad City style pizza, I don't know of anywhere else that does it like that. I think it's something unique that we have and I really like it. And the Machine Shed. I think if you if I had to pick one place and somebody from out of town was coming and they'd never been to the Quad Cities before and they, you know, wanted to know where to go to eat, I would send them to the Machine Shed first. But with that being said, I think if there's one craving that I get more than any other, it's white ice cream. I can't go home for 3 days without needing some whiting with some whiteies.
Yeah, I just had a buddy in from Indianapolis, and he's originally from Milwaukee, and he was here for the Iowa-Wisconsin game, and he'd never been to Whitey's, so I had to introduce him to that. And the best part is the very first thing he tried to do was drink his shake through a straw, and I'm like, that's not going to work for you, man.
Not going to do it, man.
You'll blow a blood vessel in your eyeball before you taste any of that shake.
Well,
it's
just
weird. You know, Philadelphia is such a food town. And on the East Coast, there's such a great tradition of food, especially up here in the Northeast. You know, New York and Philadelphia and Boston, some of these other cities. But there's just, you know, there's nothing like going home and getting some of that Quad Cities, you know, flavor that you just don't get out here.
That's true. My favorite Philly place that I've been there a few times is Monk's Cafe. Jim and I are both kind of craft beer snobs, and I guess that's one of the top five beer bars in the world, allegedly. And I had a chance to go out there a couple times, and it's something else. I don't know. Have you ever gotten over there?
I haven't gotten over there, but I've actually been told about it by several people at some of the other places that I frequent around town by some of the guys in our training room. So we have a little break coming up here after our Thursday game. I'll have to give that a shot.
Yeah, get the get a big bucket of mussels and a good Belgian beer, and you'll be set, man. That's the good stuff right there.
So who do you have coming up on Thursday?
Dallas, big rivalry game.
Thanksgiving.
We are entering a heavy part of our season with our next three games are Dallas on Thursday, and then we have the Seahawks, and then Dallas again. So coming down the stretch here, we're hitting a real testy patch, and I think if we can pull through it, you're going to see a real, you know, hardened playoff-ready team coming out the other end.
So here's a question I have for you, Julian, and this will be your assignment before the next time we talk to you sometime in the future. I am a Bears fan, and it kills me that the Packers are always loading up on Hawkeyes and then kicking butt with them. The Bears, it's like, you know what? If they just would draft some Hawkeyes, they'd probably get to the Super Bowl. You know what? I want to find out. I don't think they've had a Hawkeye on their team that I can think of since Jay Hilgenberg. Think about that. Like, I want to say, like, since the late 80s.
I believe I've seen that statistic somewhere, and I think you're exactly right. I was actually coming out of college. Joel Hilgenberg, Jay's brother, who's in the Saints Hall of Fame, was a longtime center for the Saints. Taught me how to play center. He was the first, I'd never played center in college, and he trained me in that coming out, which is what I play now with Philadelphia. And I think you're right. I think his brother Jay was the last one. And honestly, I don't know why that is. It's, you know, we're in close proximity. It, you know, it's a real Midwest, you know, kind of core team. It's one of those bizarre things. I don't know if their GM like went to state or something. I mean, I don't know what it is.
Well, you know, and it makes you wonder because they haven't won a Super Bowl since they've had a Hawkeye on their team either. So, you know, coincidence? I think not. So I have to say, since you brought up Iowa State, that was one of my all time favorite, quotes that you had, I think, talking about, you know, the level of, disdain that good Hawkeye fans have for that other program from the other side of the state. Boy, you know what? I think that if you know, I love Coach Ferentz. He's one of my favorites, but man, we can't have a losing record against those guys. Well, what goes on in that? I mean, is it really their Super Bowl? Do they get that up for it? Or give us kind of that experience.
Well, everything that I know about it comes from few friends state. And burned a few bridges in that regard. I had one friend who played on their football team, and so it's kind of one of those things where for a while it seemed like, you know, when they were having their seasons where they'd go 1-12 or whatever it is, you know, 2-11 every year, that was the goal, that was the deal, was if they beat Iowa, the rest of their season didn't matter. And then, Chizik came in and he did his thing. And honestly, I hate Gene Chizik now because he's the only person who's ever made me feel bad for Iowa State. The way that he left the program, I thought was no good from the guys that I knew in the program at the time. Just the way that they talked about it, it seemed really dirty and wrong. And so I, I felt for them just as another competitor. Coach Rhodes has actually got their program. They're a lot more focused on the big picture and the long term, and the play there. They beat like at least one ranked team every year. They're doing a good job year in and year out of kind of maybe not so much being a Big 12 contender, but at least letting people know, hey, we're still around. So I think the rivalry from both sides has kind of evened out. It's one of those things where it's a game that you get excited for. It's a game that as a player, you look forward to. I know for my generation, it's the big rivalry. For, those who came before me, I think Minnesota is a much bigger rivalry. But for us, that Iowa State rivalry is a very big deal. And it's one of those things where, we lose to them in the next 364 days. I'm just, I'm distraught about it. So, I don't know what goes on in their locker room when that week rolls around. I know that at Iowa, Coach Ferentz, in his consistency and his way of thinking, it is very, very, it's another game. Every game is important. Every week's a one-week season. We have to focus on this game this week. There's not a lot of extra hoopla and hype that goes into it from within the program. That's kind of generated from the outside.
Maybe that's something that's missing.
Yeah, interesting thoughts. For fans, it's hard too. And Jim and I have joked around that, I think losses are harder on the players in the moment and the immediate aftermath, of course, but at least players get to go back and practice and get ready to go out and hit somebody again the next week. Fans have to stew on it forever. So it's kind of interesting that way, I think.
It's true. It's very true.
Yeah, and in my case, I'm married to a Cyclone, so I get that. When you say you have the next 364 days of being distraught, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, I feel your pain there. My wife went to Iowa State, not for long. She's gone to Western Illinois for longer, but I think I'm slowly converting her into a Hawkeye. I know our son is being raised pure black and gold. So,
Well, thank God for
but
that.
it's they always get that, there's always that little bit of tension that week as regards to the game.
Oh yeah, and then Tori's daughter just went on her first college visit up to Wisconsin and came back a badger,
Oh my.
a
Yeah,
pre-badger.
the week before the Iowa-Wisconsin game too. And I grew up in Madison, and so my first job was selling soda at Camp Randall back when they only got like 40,000 fans a game back in the 80s when they were terrible at everything, which were the good old days.
Before Alvarez came in.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Julian, I know we promised not to take up too much of your time. I know you guys have practice and you're getting ready for a short week here. So I want to thank you for coming on. And if you don't mind, one thing we usually do ask our guests is to put on their thinking caps and their magic eight balls and give us a thought on how this weekend's game's going to turn out. I presume you probably haven't had a chance to watch a ton of football, but it's Black Friday, Iowa, Nebraska. Last chance to get to eight wins and match last year. How
Could
do you think the game's going to
be
turn?
Pelini's swan song.
Well, here's crossing our fingers for that one. But I'll tell you what, having from what I've been able to see, I've not been able to watch as many games as I would have liked. Traveling with the team and partially because my cable here is awful. But for the most part, from what I've seen, I will say this, that Nebraska has in the past, and that seems this year also, leans on that running game primarily. I think their big star this year, don't they have a new running back who's pretty good?
It's that Amir Abdullah is actually
Yeah,
back.
Abdullah.
Yeah. He's having a good year. He's a little banged up, I guess.
Right.
A little banged up, but he's having a good year. My one criticism of Iowa teams in general, both in my time and before my time and after my time, is with the exception of a few stellar players, we've always had a little bit of a problem, I think, generating a solid pass rush with just four rushers. But the trade side of that is that we've always done a really good job of stopping the run. It's a very run first oriented defense. And so I think you take away a team's ground game, you make them one-dimensional, and you allow your guys on the back end the freedom to do what they have to do in coverage. I'm going to say that with the up-and-down nature of our team this year, the way that the offense has kind of been on this roller coaster ride, that coming off of the Wisconsin game, we're on the upswing, offense is clicking, Big Day and Kinnick blacked out, everyone's going to be absolutely jacked out of their minds. I'm going with a big Hawkeye win. We'll give him a nice solid 35-17.
Wow.
Ooh, I'm loving that. I'm kind of feeling it too. I kind of feel like, you know, the Nebraska has their designated four losses every year and they have to lose this one to get that. So, you know, it's fate, right?
Fate.
All right.
We'll go with that.
Thank you so much for coming on. We'll have to check in with you again, and good luck to the Eagles this Thanksgiving, because I loathe Dallas. So, you know, you get to get out there and, you know, lay some lumps on them. Please do it.
I will do so. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, you guys. It's a lot of fun.
Great. Thanks, Julian.
Thanks.
Well, that was a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed the prediction.
I did too. Man, I would take that in a heartbeat.
As a person to be proud of, to be from the Quad Cities and to be an ex-Hawkeye like us, huh?
Absolutely. And, you know, you can't argue with his choice of food, especially locally here. Although, I guess I would love the luxury of being a athletic offensive lineman that I could actually go to Harris Pizza for dinner and then go over to Whitey's for for dessert. Right now, those things have to happen in, like, different months at my age.
I will say, though, I'm more of a Frank's guy than a Harris guy myself. I like the old school Silvis Quad Cities pizza, although Harris is pretty good too.
Yeah. Well, no, he's done very well. He's not just a good ambassador for the Quad Cities, but also just a heck of an example of the success that Iowa can have in the NFL. And yeah, I love the prediction. And I think that he may be onto something. Especially if we can continue, you know, where Iowa left off in their last possessions there in last Saturday, and kind of pick up where they left off. And it seems like Nebraska is both a little beaten up physically, but also, I don't know, reading their message boards, of course, not much you can glean from that, but it sure feels like they're, you know, maybe mentally or emotionally on a down note as well. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, they were talking about playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only concern I'd have a little bit from the Iowa standpoint is, you know, did they put everything they had into that Wisconsin game? You know, again, mentally and physically too. You know, I, as we were saying earlier, so proud of how hard they fought, and I, you know, there's no doubt that they left it all out on the field. I just I'm hoping that they have enough left in the tank, again, physically and mentally, to wind back up in, you know, what, 5-6 days here and get it going on Black Friday.
Yeah. Well, they've got the same calendar on the other side too. So, but yeah, I think my biggest issue there would be, you know, making sure that the two guys on the defensive line, Louis Tinkerpatat and Carl Davis, are back up to speed, because I think both of them had injuries there late in the game, and I think both came back. But still, you hate to see those two guys, especially your two seniors, banged up.
Yeah, I think anything short of an amputation is not to keep those guys off the field at this point. I mean, the last game in their career, home game, rivalry game, you know, it's kind of a big deal. I you know, just hopefully they'll be able to perform at 100% level.
All right, so you heard Julian's prediction. He's being very optimistic. I'd like to go with, you know, something similar on that, but you're on the spot first, and you're not going to be there, so you're going to have to give us your proxy prediction on how you think this game's going to turn out.
Yeah, I'm going to be watching from Florida this year, but actually, first time in 43 years I have not spent Thanksgiving in Iowa. So, well, I guess I should say the Quad Cities because my grandma lived in Illinois and I guess we ate there a few times, but that's splitting
It
hairs.
counts.
It counts. I could see Iowa from there. I do think Iowa's going to win. I do think Nebraska is circling the drain a little bit. I do think the game's going to be a little closer, though, just because that seems to be Iowa's MO, not just this year, but all years. So, I think I'm going to go with the same. For once, I'm actually going to make the same pick that I made for the Hawkeye Report roundtable, and I am going to say Iowa 28 and 21 for the Cornhuskers. Pelini earns his, patented 8-4 regular season, and the fans are all up in arms over there because how do you fire a guy that wins 8 or 9 games every year?
It's weird, but yeah. So I also think I'm calling for a win here. I didn't last week, and we almost pulled it off. But I think the offense is actually clicking, particularly when it wants to. And I think we can put some solid numbers up on Nebraska. So I'm thinking that we'll actually break the 30 mark again. I'm calling Iowa 31, Nebraska 24. And I think that we see Jake and the passing game open up maybe a little bit earlier, even if the running game struggles. Maybe we light that fire in the beginning of the third quarter and not the end of the third quarter.
Hey, here's a crazy thought. How about, passing it downfield in the first half?
Hey, you know that. Slow down.
Oh, wait, that's not legal, is it? It's not legal in Iowa football.
I
I
don't know,
forgot.
you know. That's kind of that flashy West Coast stuff if you throw a forward pass in the first quarter.
Hey, we're
So,
supposed to be a West Coast offense. We're like the last college team in America still playing a West Coast.
was gonna say, we're the West Coast circa 1979. I don't know what the West Coast is doing now. It's out in Oregon. I guess it's moved to the Northwest Coast, huh?
It would appear that way, wouldn't
Yeah.
it?
Well, I hope you have a good trip. I hope our predictions are all right. Actually, I'll just go with Julian's more than anyone's. We'll be back here next week to put a button on this season, one way or the other.
And then
And
maybe a bowl week podcast,
yeah,
huh?
absolutely. Well, we'll have to talk about a bowl week. Maybe talk about where we think we might go, and then we'll have to do a post-game breakdown of the bowl week and kick off, our wish list for 2015. So,
You don't want these podcast checks to stop coming too
no,
soon.
I mean, we gotta milk that. We gotta keep that gravy train rolling in.
Exactly.
So, all
Well,
right,
happy
well.
Thanksgiving to everybody in Hawkeye Land, including you, Mr.
Oh,
Blado.
thanks. Yeah, I'm gonna enjoy it. And sorry you weren't gonna be there for the game, although it is supposed to be a little bit colder, so
Yeah,
you'll probably enjoy
somehow
Florida.
at least there's a silver lining, right? I hate missing Iowa games, but if I have to miss one in the end of November, I'd rather be doing it from a beach with a drink in my hand, which is what I plan on doing.
There are worse ways to miss it, like sitting up at 3 o'clock in the morning staring at a podcast in some place in Asia. So, all right, but no, that's good, and we'll you will be missed, but your tickets will go to good use. So
Good,
we're
good.
bringing some kids. So, all right, well, with that, we'll say on Iowa.
And go Hawks.